Well, I'm just going to start by saying I never expected to be the guy in front of the cameras, in front of the media. I just wanted to grill. I just wanted to run my business, sell our sandwiches and our platters of meat, give good job opportunities to people, and try to enrich my local community with the kind of food that I can make. I've been put in this strange position where I had no choice but to engage in civil disobedience. So I'm going to start by telling kind of how we got to this point now. So back in March, when the pandemic was declared an emergency and everything got locked down, everybody was a little scared and they wanted to do their part. So we shut down the restaurant, we complied with all the orders. But I was looking around and going, well, if there's such a deadly pandemic, how come nobody around me is getting sick and nobody's dying? You're looking at the statistics, and they would always show you, you know, on the news, like CTV and CBC, the numbers of people dying, but there'd never be any comparison to previous years. And there was all these new metrics that were being discussed, like the number of positive cases, which you never heard about before. You never heard any year how many positive flu cases there were. I mean, for years, like, you can look back, you can search up yourself, hospitals overrun, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. Try it out for yourself and see. The hospitals being overrun during the cold and flu season has been a problem for like a decade, maybe more. I haven't looked back much before that. So it seems like the responsibility here should really lie on our government to increase the capacity of our healthcare facility, not shut down small businesses. Then I did a little bit more research and I started learning about the PCR tests and the high cycle threshold that's used in a lot of countries. And this was really driving up those positive cases that were putting us in and out of lockdowns. So when the premier came out with the new color-coded system that was all dependent on the positivity rate, and you could be put into lockdown based on how many people were positive, but it didn't really have anything to do with real world metrics like ICU admissions or overall mortality. So I reached out personally to DynaCare and Life Labs to see what their cycle thresholds that they were using were for the PCR test, and they were using 40, 42, 44. Even Dr. Fauci himself said that that was going to lead to just picking up dead nucleotides, and those particles they were finding were not replication competent, which means that they weren't really getting anybody sick. So this whole idea of asymptomatic transmission seemed to be a myth as well. Yet we're all out here every day wearing diapers on our mouths to try to protect people from something that's invisible and hasn't really had an effect on any real world metrics at all. So I also noticed how there was in other countries data coming out about how long-term care homes were being really affected by this virus, this alleged virus that's yet to be isolated. Yet nothing was being done to protect these long-term care facilities. I was thinking to myself since last June, why don't they just put the rapid antigen testing and two nurses in a tent outside every long-term care facility and make sure everybody coming in and out doesn't have COVID? But instead, they gave CERB payments to hundreds of thousands of Canadians. And I'm not a doctor, nor am I a scientist, but it made sense to me that it would probably be a lot less costly to just implement the proper security measures outside of these facilities. Then other things, like the studies that came out of Korea about how the people dying from COVID, it was like 10 times more likely to die if you had low vitamin D, yet they weren't supplementing us or giving people vitamin D or suggesting that they go outside in the sun. They were just saying, stay inside and stay away from people. So none of this was really adding up to me. So I started calling my local politicians. So I called my MPP, I called and emailed John Tory and Doug Ford, but never got any responses. So now I really feel like I'm out here on an island. Everybody that I'm talking to constantly is saying how it's a super deadly pandemic, but there's no real answers to the questions. There's only blind faith and obedience in this alleged pandemic. It felt like my only option left was to engage in civil disobedience. I told myself and a lot of my staff that if we ever got put into a lockdown again in the second wave, that I would open up against the provincial orders to bring attention to the issue and to challenge the Reopening Ontario Act in court. So you could see the predictive programming from the media like CBC and CTV and Global and CP24 that are all, I think, subsidized somewhere between $500 million and $2 billion a year by the federal government. I noticed that they were kind of leaking hints from Doug Ford about this second wave lockdown. And Doug Ford came out and said that he would not lock us down again to restaurants, bars, and retail without proper evidence. Turns out he did. 3 days later, he came out, locked us all down, and didn't provide any evidence. About a week later, Ontario Public Health came out and they gave us yet another new metric called outbreaks. And allegedly, these outbreaks were happening in restaurants. But it was really strange because we had been contact tracing in here for months, as were all my colleagues in the industry, but nobody I talked to had this contact tracing data collected at any time. So how are they determining that these alleged outbreaks were happening in restaurants? It made no sense. I said, screw it, we're opening up, we're engaging in civil disobedience. You guys saw what happened. The first day, there was a Section 22 order applied by Eileen Davila issuing a closure notice on the property. And it said on that notice that she had reasonable and probable grounds to believe that a communicable disease existed on the property. I take issue with that because there was nobody that I saw there that was symptomatic. So how could she say that there's probable grounds to believe that a communicable disease existed on the property? So I ignored it. We engaged in civil disobedience again the second day. Had a successful day. I got my charges under the Section 9 of the Reopening Ontario Act, which is what I wanted to fight in court. I came back for the third day, and there was a Trespass to Property Act invoked on my building at 7 Queen Elizabeth Boulevard in Etobicoke. Now, under that act, only the occupier can apply that order onto a property, and the verbiage for what defines an occupier is somebody who is in physical possession of the property or somebody who's responsible for the maintenance and operations therein. Eileen Davila is neither of those. She was not in physical possession of the property and she's not responsible for anything that goes on inside. That's me. I'm the occupant of that building. Despite that, the police engaged in arresting me, took this Trespass to Property Act order at face value and arrested me for going onto my own property. This never should have been escalated to a criminal matter. This was purely a civil matter, and there were avenues for the authorities to take to close my restaurant with a Section 9 order. Now, they eventually did. Justice Kimmel, who was the judge presiding over my case, granted that, but did not run that order through the charter. Now, recently in BC, the government was seeking an injunction against a church for reopening, and the judge in that case did run it through the charter, and he made reference to my case, saying that Justice Kimmel did not consider the charter when making her decision. I think that's kind of concerning that our authorities are doing that. Now, in hindsight, after those 3 days of protest, where many of you were there, we had hundreds of people outside, hundreds of people inside. We were all shaking hands and hugging each other. Everybody was engaging in civil disobedience. And nobody got sick. There's been no contact tracing data revealing that anybody was sick, in the hospital, in the ICU, or died from anything that happened at my restaurant. So after this all happened, I looked for some lawyers. I had a very hard time finding any lawyers that were on side. There was 3 lawyers that I had to fire because they did not want to challenge the government authority at all. And I finally came across a great team of lawyers. That's the Armstrong family. There's Nirmala, Amanda, and Michael Armstrong, as well as Michael Swinwood. They're my legal team. They are activists, and they have filed a constitutional challenge in response to my Section 9 order. This is an inroad for us to make this constitutional challenge, where many other people who have tried to do this have had their applications or their statements of claim thrown right out of the courts. Fortunately, we have an inroad through this Section 9 order where it cannot be thrown out at all. My legal team is working with international lawyers, with various experts, public health experts and a number of PhDs will be challenging all the evidence that holds up what's left of this narrative that there's a deadly pandemic that's at the risk to the general public where small businesses should be closed down. All right, so that's how we got to this point, and if you guys are okay with it, I'll take a couple minutes to read a bit of our constitutional challenge, because I think this is really excellent. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Why, you're obviously frustrated and with the direction that this is on, with the way the government on Paris panel is, why are you taking it to this level now? Why are you going to the courts now?
Because there's no other option. There's no end in sight. No real, I'm really struggling with that word today, no real world metric has been affected by this pandemic. There is no increase in deaths, and these alleged overflowing ICUs and hospitals, this is not a new issue, and if you look at the historical data, there's way less people in than usual. This tells me that the government is completely overreaching in an effort to close down small businesses and destroy our economy, and there seems to be a larger globalist agenda at play.
Can you explain what this challenge actually is?
Absolutely. We're going after the entire Reopening Ontario Act. So I'll read you a little bit from it. It's between me and my company and Her Majesty the Queen and Right of Ontario. And this is challenging the constitutionality of the entire emergency order that's been deployed at a provincial level. So I have a few paragraphs, about 5 minutes, if you can bear with me for a moment. The following is the legal basis for the constitutional question. Pandemic is a word that, if misused, can cause unreasonable fear or unjustified implementation of lockdown protocols and measures, leading to unnecessary suffering and death. Science is designed to inform policymakers, but when it is manipulated or falsified for ulterior motives, humanity as a whole suffers. In response to the COVID-19 virus, the governments have invoked extraordinary executive powers predicated on unsubstantiated scientific and legal grounds with catastrophic consequences to the people in Ontario, Canada, and indeed throughout the world. During the period from January 2020 to present day, the population throughout the country are witnessing the eradication of individual and collective rights in the name of protection of people's health. Evidence will demonstrate that the consequences of a lockdown are much more severe than the assumed pandemic. In the process, the rule of law has become the law of rule, where inherent rights and freedoms have become privileges. At this moment, it is very difficult to express that we all live in a free and democratic society. By any standard, international human rights and constitutional protection are all being eliminated to accommodate controlling people, to vaccinate them, all by the World Health Organization. The restrictions put in place by governments to impose draconian measures on its citizens without a scientific or medical rationale constitutes an abuse of human rights and a crime against humanity. In this tapestry, one must contemplate censorship of ordinary people who have no place to express their opposition, and mainstream media does not make space for anyone who does not accord with this draconian agenda. Civil disobedience is the only avenue through which ordinary citizens can voice their concerns. Ordinary citizens who hold opposite opinions of conventional wisdom that fear should guide us are being silenced. Important and emerging scientific evidence is being suppressed, and those asking relevant and legitimate questions are being shamed, harassed, and punished for speaking out. The applicants, which is me, submit that Canada is in a state of constitutional crisis. Fundamental rights and freedoms are being usurped by federal, provincial, and municipal governments without constitutional authority or due process. The lawfulness and implications of these actions have yet to be reviewed on a constitutional basis. In that regard, the applicants submit the following constitutional questions to the courts for consideration. Now, here's the three pillars of our legal challenge. Number one, do the federal, provincial, and municipal governments have lawful constitutional authority to unequivocally adopt, adhere, and legislate in relation to the international recommendations and guidelines of the World Health Organization to declare a global pandemic without oversight and due process? Because that's what happened here. The World Health Organization said there's a global pandemic and our governments reacted. They took that at face value. There was no study that was done after that. They just took it at face value and locked us down because of recommendations from the World Health Organization. That's not the way it works here. There's rules in place where our legislature has to be involved to adopt these kind of measures. They didn't. They went around the legislature. There was no meetings in the legislature. The COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent emergency measures were lawful, despite the lack of oversight and due process. Does the provincial government have constitutional authority under Section 91 of the Constitution Act to legislate the suspension of rights and freedoms with criminal law sanctions and dire emotional, financial, and health consequences for Ontarians on matters concerning the health and welfare of Canadians based purely on preventative concerns? So again, there is a federal emergency act that was avoided. They went right around it to a provincial level where provincial legislation was written, like the Reopening Ontario Act and the acts in the other provinces. And that's not our normal process here in Canada. And it was done that way intentionally to avoid any debate in the legislature. And if those two planks of evidence do not justify this Reopening Ontario Act being thrown away immediately, we can now fall back onto the charter. And we ask, are the applicants section, and by applicant, that's me in this case, but that's everybody in Ontario, are our sections 2, 7, 8, 9, and 15 of our Charter of Rights and Freedoms under the Canadian Charter infringed upon by the implementation and application of the preventative measures as legislated and applied? And if so, what is the infringement justified under Section 1? And as we proceed with the case, I think it's going to become very clear to everybody that that infringement is not justified at all.
What court is this being submitted to?
Superior Court. It was submitted yesterday in response to my Section 9 order.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you able to email
the copy of it now? Yeah, the NCQ is public. If you email me, I'll send it over to you.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it. Pardon me? Adam@adamsonbarbecue.com. Just check the spelling because it's a little bit different of barbecue. All right. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Yeah, no, please don't care. I'm going to go on.
Good stuff.
And then you can do that.
Okay, sounds good. So, in regards to that first plank of evidence, the World Health Organization is not a faction in Canadian Parliament, part of the constitutional monarchy in Canada, or an institution governing statutory or legal affairs in Canada. Thus, the World Health Organization has no authority to form the basis or proposal or inception of any action or legislation in Canada without due process. The second plank of evidence, if it is found that the declaration of the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent emergency measures were lawful, despite the lack of oversight and due process, does the provincial government have constitutional authority under Section 91 of the Constitution Act to legislate the suspension of rights and freedoms, criminal law sanctions, and dire emotional, financial, and health consequences for Ontarians? And under the Charter, we talked about that already. That's Section 2, 5, 7, 9, and 15. That's it for my reading of the notice, and I can take questions.
So something that would fit into a television soundbite for us, because you have a lot of detailed technical information, and that's excellent, that's good to have, but as far as a soundbite, in 50 words or less, what are you seeking with this legal move here?
We are seeking for the entire reopening of... Let me say that again. We're challenging the Reopening Ontario Act in its entirety. We're going to be challenging all of the evidence that supports what's left of this pandemic narrative and whether or not it infringes on our charter.
When you enter into these kinds of situations, your legal team usually advises you what your chances are. What chances have your legal team given you in having a sort of a favorable outcome in this?
Oh, it's without question, this one's in the bag. Yeah. We're going to win. We're following the structure of many successful legal challenges that have happened all around the world, the States and overseas. We're challenging all the evidence with the same experts. So without a doubt, there's no evidence that's been shown to the general public that could be brought up in this court challenge that would give them a win.
Have you Catherine, is there any precedence in Canada regarding a similar kind of move that you're making with your legal team?
No, not at all. This will be the most vast and broad challenge against emergency orders in the country.
And also, can you give us an update on your, I guess, GoFundMe status in terms of how much you've raised for your legal fees?
That was $335,000. So far, I've spent $10,000 on my criminal proceedings. Those should be thrown out right away. As I said before, this is a civil issue. It is not a criminal issue. And that's a complete overreach. It's going to cost somewhere between $120,000 and $140,000 to bring the entire constitutional question. After that, we expect it'll be appealed, and we'll have to take that to a higher court. If there's any money left over at the end, we're going to bring a challenge in another province.
There's also the matter, isn't there, you being billed, I believe, almost $200,000 by the police for the amount of resources that was used to shut you down. Can you give us a status on that case?
Yeah, they sent me a demand letter for $187,000, and that was to cover the 250 police that were there that day on Thursday. I was told if I didn't pay that by December 31st, they'd be going to a Superior Court judge for an order demanding it, and they have not started that process yet, surely because they know that any reasonable judge will not grant them that order.
I'm wondering if one of the pillars in your argument is that if we've seen what's happened in this pandemic, chief medical officers, the average person couldn't name their region or their city's chief medical officer. Suddenly these people have enormous power. They're unelected, they're unaccountable. I speak of someone like Dr. Ellen Davila here in Toronto. Is that problematic in that these people are enacting powers they were really never meant to enact in the first place?
Yeah, I think it's very strange to see how the power has shifted into the hands of public health officials, that decisions that affect our economy so dearly, it almost feels as if the politicians are pushing that off onto scapegoats at this point. That's the best explanation I have for
that. Also, going back to November, it was certainly excessive. I mean, it was literally all the King's men and all the King's horses descending upon your Etobicoke restaurant. Adam, was the unspoken strategy here by the likes of Dr. Davila and Mayor Tory to make an example out of you, to send a message to any other retailer, gym owner, restaurateur, that if you dare have the temerity to open up, guess what, you're going to be on the 6 o'clock news. Guess what, the mounted unit's coming to your door. You're going to be led off in handcuffs as you were into a police cruiser. Was that them trying to quell any kind of, I guess, retail rebellion before it even began?
No, I don't have any conversations with Doug Ford and John Tory. As hard as I've tried, they've never got back to me. So I can only make assumptions. And I was out there every day telling people, giving them suggestions. My bail conditions prohibit me from probably repeating those words now. That's how badly they don't want me to say those words. But you can look back to our previous interviews to see what I was saying those days. I think that's safe. My lawyer's not here, so I think that's probably not a bail breach. I think that's pretty obvious, Dave. They escalated from a civil to a criminal matter despite having several legal avenues they could have done to have me stopped. Sending 253 police officers, that was the biggest show of force we've seen in Canada since the G20. I think it's pretty obvious the message that they were trying to set, and the subsequent media smear campaign calling me a racist and white privilege and all these other things that come with that when you challenge the establishment. So yeah, I think you're right. I think that was a show of force to make sure that nobody else opened up in protest.
And can you give us an update on this very restaurant we're having the press conference in? There's several warnings and letters from the city peppering your front door. You're shut down, I guess, for some kind of non-compliance issue. So you can't serve members of the public here, even for curbside service and takeout, I understand. What is the story behind that?
So we haven't had a business license in here since I opened the restaurant in 2016. The business license is a $500 a year authorization from the city. It's needed in some jurisdictions, like here in Etobicoke, whereas up in my location in Aurora, that municipality doesn't engage in that additional tax grab with the businesses that are supporting its local economy. This is all in regards to a zoning issue that's tied up in bureaucratic process right now. I've been to court several times, and the city never took any enforcement action against me. What they did was give me fines that were roughly equal to the cost of that, what that business license would be. We are a large economic benefit to the neighborhood. Last year, our payroll was over $1 million. Very thriving business, generating tax for the community. Now that business license, because I'm making an assumption, because John Tory told the city to throw the book at me, I have the chief building officer, or the head guy of the building department, down my throat, making sure that we close down or they're going to put in legal action against the landlord here. So this was never an issue for the last 5 years, but now that I engaged in civil disobedience, the city, I believe, is trying to put me out of business at all my locations. They have sent bylaw, police, fire, just about every day since November, we've had guys, the authorities from the city, walking in and out of my place, parked outside, parked across the street. I would hate to guess how much tax dollars has been spent trying to find some issues to shut me down here.
And Adam, in the big picture, so many people struggle to make sense of it. For example, your Etobicoke location, you're about 300 meters away from a Costco. This location's less than half a kilometer away from a Costco. Costco's that have food service operations still running. Costco's that are, and other big box stores that are packing people in. And a lot of people would say a small restaurant, a barber shop, a nail salon, they're committed to hygiene. That's part of the business. They have limited amounts of people. How is it explained that big box stores can operate with impunity with such huge numbers, and yet the government and the bureaucracy is going after the little guy?
I'd say that this is a fear and intimidation strategy, which is the only strategy that the authorities have left, all in regards to the use of masks. They want to make sure that that symbol of our loss of freedom of speech is plastered all over our face every day. And anywhere where you would go to possibly remove that thing, for example, for a while it was at the dentist, it was when you go to the hair salon, when you go in and eat at a restaurant, all those kind of things were shut down. It's, yeah, that's what we're doing. Okay, any other questions?
We're good, thanks.
Awesome.
Thank you, Ed.
All right, thanks guys, thanks for coming.